how does that confidence manifest itself?
When I sit down with clients and, when I sit down with bigger clients, just my confidence level of being able to deal with them and answer their questions. The big client, although I've known him for 30 years, I've always been a little bit intimidated by him, because I would say something that I thought was really smart and worked really good on other clients, and he would come back and kind of shoot a little bit of a hole in it. So he's very sophisticated, and that would throw me off once in a while. He doesn't throw me off anymore.
Good. All right. So when you get in, tell me if I'm trying to simplify this or shorten it, this part of the conversation. When you get in front of clients, you do prospects, you do really well.
I think so.
High degree of confidence, not afraid to put yourself in any situation, not afraid to disagree with a client, not a prospect, not reluctant to try to get them to think about something in a different way. You feel that you are you're in charge of that conversation. You're inside your comfort zone in that conversation.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, that would be my guess too. Now, the homework for this, last time we talked was in November, and your initial thought was you were going to re-up in January. So back in November, I gave you some homework for the next time we met. The homework was to have your practice overview in final form, read two chapters of Jim Lehrer's book, The Powerful Engagement, and then read Larry Wilson's book. Did you do those things?
No.
Okay, now, do you have Larry Wilson's book, Play to Win?
Yes, I do.
I want you to, is it in the office?
It's at home because I have read some of it.
Okay, I'm going to go through this, and here's not the whole book, chapter two. The chapter two. I have spent time with Larry Wilson. Has passed away. But I spent time with him in a small group once. I learned a lot from him.
Uh-huh.
The biggest thing, and I think I shared this with you before, is he explained the difference between playing to win and playing not to lose.
Yep, we did discuss this before.
Okay, but I want you, I know you're busy, you got a lot going on. I still want you to read his book, but what I want you to do is for sure to read chapter two. And I'd ask you to do that fairly quickly.
Okay.
And in Jim Lehrer's book, The Power of Full Engagement, I want you to read chapters 2 and 11.
Okay.
First part is the chapter 2 is The Disengaged Life of Roger B. And I'm not equating you with Roger B in this, but I think you'll see some of yourself in that chapter. And then the chapter 11 is The Reengaged Life of Roger B. And you'll see some of yourself in that.
Okay.
So both of these books are good reads. If you had nothing to do, you're going to go on a two-week island, and you love to read, I'd say read these books. For
Got
most
it.
People, I say read Lehrer's book first. I think for you, Larry Wilson's book hits home. Now let me just hit a couple of things in here that I think you will recognize. Here's what playing not to lose is. Playing not to lose is ultimately about avoiding fear. We are bright people, and most of us learned long ago to avoid situations in which fear might come up. What you and I have talked about over and over again is starting referral conversations. Mm-hmm. Agreed?
Yes.
Okay, again, we're talking about playing not to lose and fear. And I'm skipping. Now I'm on page 23. Avoiding situations where we believe we are at risk often starts early in life. People have different things. And he goes and talks in this book about a kid who was loved the color and loved the color outside the lines, but all his classmates laughed at him. So he had a fear about doing anything outside the lines, and that's all in this chapter. Okay, The next thing, our early warning systems are put on full alert early in our lives to help us avoid situations in which our status or sense of belonging might be threatened. So playing not to lose is about avoiding fear. This usually starts early in life, and as it says, our systems are on full alert to avoid things that make us fearful. And I hope you're writing a couple of these things down. On page 24, there's a little box, and it says, ask yourself these questions. And I'm going to go through them.
Okay.
How do you define winning at work, with your family, and other aspects of your life? And he talks in here, you know, most people when they say, you know, what is winning, and it's trying to beat the other person. That's not necessarily the right way to look at it. The thing that I think fits you really well, what situations do you avoid because at some level you think there's a risk of losing a sense of belonging or status? And what that might look like is, gosh, if I ask for referrals, people might say no, and then they're not going to like me anymore, or they're going to think my business is in the tank because I've never asked before. And then the third is, what situations do you avoid that could be important to your personal or professional growth? And I think we both know the answer to that one, don't we?
I'm not sure.
I think the only missing part of your game, and I'm not there with you every day, so this is a big statement for not enough information, is beginning referral conversations.
Oh yes, yeah, absolutely, Rob. Yeah, you're right on the money. Yes.
What situations do you avoid that could be important to your professional or personal growth?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Rob.
If talking personal growth, a lot of personal growth is intimacy with people, letting your guards down. You and I have developed, I think, a really good relationship, Kent, because you have not been afraid to spill what's eating you up, personally and business-wise. So,
no, that's true.
On page, I have as good a relationship with you. I mean, I've coached hundreds of people. You and I have a top five relationship. Knowing who you are and what makes you tick. I've got really good business relationships with a lot of folks, but as far as knowing someone intimately, or as intimately as possible, at 2,000 miles apart, is you've shared. So, on page 24, look at that box and ask yourself those three questions. I would like for you to spend the majority of your time on number two and number three. Okay?
Okay.
So we playing not to lose is all about fear. If I said to you, Kent, I've got my best friend has moved to Las Vegas. He really wants to see you. I want you to pick up the phone and give him a call. Would you make that call?
Absolutely.
Because there's
in
no
a heartbeat.
Risk. There's no risk.
Yeah, zero. Yeah.
There's no risk.
Yep.
So if I said, hey, you know, Ken, I really want you to use this acquisition strategy, you may or may not do it because of the risk involved. All right. Now, so we've talked about playing not to lose. The only thing you get from playing not to lose is relief. Nothing really changes. If you try to avoid fear, you don't make any real progress. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let's talk about playing to win. And the reason he talks about playing to lose before he talks about playing not to lose versus playing to win the reason he does it is that order. He says most people are in the first category. They play yeah. not to lose. Because nobody likes rejection. So this isn't just a Kent Dever deal. This is a Kent Dever deal, a Kent Dever who's doing $1 million in production and has a brand that very few FAs have. All right, now let's talk about playing to win. In its simplest sense, playing to win is consciously choosing not to automatically avoid situations in which we might fail, be embarrassed, or be rejected.
Hmm.
In its simplest sense, playing to win is consciously choosing not to automatically avoid situations in which we might fail, be embarrassed, or be rejected. That's, in my opinion, where you are.
Mm-hmm.
You've got it all. You're like a guy that's got a ticket to the Super Bowl and walks up to the ticket counter at the stadium and won't go in.
Mm-hmm.
You've done all the hard work. You have developed you don't lose many clients, correct?
That is for sure. Since Supernova, I have lost very few, and the ones I do lose, it hurts. But yeah, I have not lost many clients at all.
People like dealing with you. You've got a solid practice. You're an ethical man. You're playing not to lose.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, again, in this, I'm still in chapter two. There's another blue box on page 25. Here's playing to win. Consciously choosing to go as far as I can with all that I have and learning from whatever happens.
Mm.
That's really cool, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
Consciously choosing to go as far as I can with all that I have and learning from whatever happens.
That's really good.
It's really good. That's what you're doing. I
mm-hmm.
think that's what you're doing. As far as there's no reason other than that I can see that you would have no prospects. Because
mm-hmm.
you know I've pounded you on the VIPSA conversation when
yep.
people recognize your value. And
yep.
I would bet a lot of money that you have those opportunities on a regular basis.
Yeah.
It's as easy as it gets. Now, the last thing that I'm going to point out, there's another box on page 26. It says, ask yourself, and these are the two questions, where have you chosen to take risk and as a result grown, often in ways you didn't expect? The second question is, where have you given 100% regardless of the potential for failure and been satisfied with the effort regardless of the outcome? In other words, when you do your best, you're satisfied with the outcome. And the way I would, my own experience, there are days that I had a great day production-wise, but I didn't really do anything to to grow the business.
Right.
There are also days that I didn't do a lot of production, but I did everything I knew I should have done in order to improve the practice.
Yeah.
If you left at the end of the day, and I'm just making numbers up, and had four prospecting conversations, I don't know how much business you would have done, but I know you would have gone home feeling pretty good about your day.
Oh my, absolutely.
That's playing to win. So here's again. Read chapter two in Larry Wilson's book, Play to Win, and read chapters 2 and 11 in Jim Lehrer's book, The Power of Full Engagement. I think you will enjoy. You probably invest 20 minutes, and I think you'll enjoy the story. All right?
Okay.
Now, we also talked last November about asking the enthusiastically endorsed question. You remember that conversation?
Yep, I sure do.
And my question is, have you had the done the enthusiastically endorsed asked the enthusiastically endorsed question of all your clients?
No.
All right. Tell me why.
I started when I first started with New Supernova. I didn't see much. I don't know why. I've gotten lazy. I started it and then I quit, and it's not on my mind. It's not on my desk. I forget to do it.
Okay.
And then when I have asked for it, because I did early when I first started Supernova, I did ask for it. I didn't do anything with it. Nothing.
Okay. I want you remember we talked about, and I sent you an example of a game board?
Yes.
Having one or two things on your game board, and there are two qualifications to be on your game board. One, they're quantifiable. This isn't where you say, I want to add $250,000 to my production. This is where you say, I want to have 5 VIPSA conversations. They got to be doable. To be on your game board, they got to be doable, and they got to be quantifiable. If I said, I want you to have 5 enthusiastically endorsed questions a week between the time we meet, between now and the time we next meet, that's really under your control.
Right.
And it's quantifiable.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to have 5 a week. That's one a day. I don't care whether they're three in one day and 2 in another. I want you to average one a day. Now, let's think about this. Now, I know this is what I'm getting ready to say is redundant. But as a mentor of mine said, Rob, you can never say the right thing too many times.
Yep.
So you're asking that question. And if somebody would say, Kent, why are you asking me that, which they're not going to do, but if they did, your answer is, one of the things that I do is to make sure my clients have the very best professional help away from the things that I do for them. Oh, hard to argue with that.
Yep.
And so, Ms. Jones, I was preparing for our call, or as I'm looking through your folder, I've never asked you about the person who does your taxes. Who is that person? Well, Jimmy Jones, whatever. Is Jimmy somebody that you can enthusiastically endorse? And if the answer they may hesitate and not understand the question. So at that point, you have to explain what an enthusiastically endorsed CPA does.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a CPA?
Yes.
Can you enthusiastically endorse that CPA?
I do, and I have.
And tell me, you got to be able to, when Ms. Jones doesn't understand the question or doesn't know how to answer the question, you've got to help her. Well,
right.
Let me describe what an enthusiastically endorsed CPA does. They return your calls. They look for ways to save money. They get the work done on time. All the things that an enthusiastically endorsed CPA does. And then she can answer the question yes or no.
Right.
So if the answer is no, you have an opportunity to refer somebody to her.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Jones, I work with some really good CPAs in the area. I would be happy to introduce you to one on a totally non-obligatory basis. So now you get the opportunity to refer.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I know it's redundant. We believe that you've got to give before you get.
Mm-hmm.
If she says, yes, I love my CPA, your response is, I'm really glad to hear that. One of the things I do is to make sure that my clients have the very best professional help away from the things that I do for them. I like to think I know all the good CPAs in the area. Do you mind if I pick up the phone, call your CPA, and introduce myself? No, that's fine. You're getting permission to use their name.
Mm-hmm.
And then you call and you say, we have a common client. You use the client's name. I was having my monthly call with her, and she was singing your praises.
Mm.
I get to work with CPAs around in the area. I like to know the good ones. Is there a time I could stop by and you could explain to me why our common client is so enthusiastic about what you do?
Mm, beautiful.
Kent, if you got that call from a CPA, you know, Kent, I work with advisors around the Las Vegas area. I like to know the good ones. Is there a time I could stop by and you could explain for me what you do that makes our common client so excited about what you do? You would make time to see that person.
That's if I could get my feet back on the ground.
Yeah, if you could get your feet back on the ground. And remember, CPAs are doing the same thing you're doing. They can't make
sure, absolutely.
They can't make any money with small accounts. They
right.
can't add any value. Somebody's got 50 grand. Frankly, you can't add a lot more value than Fidelity or Schwab does.
That's correct.
It's just not enough mass there to make a difference. You know, if they weren't
right.
You know, if they weren't earning 7% or 6%, it really isn't that big a difference. They're the
right.
same way. They're looking for ways to that they can build margin in. So
right.
you think about all the parties here, the party to have these conversations. One is your client. Your clients like you. They trust you or they'd leave. Another interested party would be a CPA you could refer to. Not
mm-hmm.
hard at all to say, hey, Bill, I'm just talking to one of my clients. She's not very excited about her CPA. I'd like to introduce you all. Is there a time that you could come to my office and I could introduce you, however you set it up? Another interested party would be somebody who is doing a great job who you have the opportunity to go out and sit down with. And what I know
mm-hmm.
will happen is in that while you're talking to that enthusiastically endorsed CPA, Kent, you're going to have an opportunity to talk about what you do.
Sure.
When I started working with Knapp 6 years ago, I called my CPA because I needed to, you know, I don't work for Knapp. I'm a independent contractor.
Right, right.
He said, well, what are you doing? And I explained it to him. He said, oh, I did that to my practice a couple years ago.
Mm.
Not Supernova, but he reduced the number of people. He established a minimum. And he said his business went up, and he has a whole lot. I think he went from 11 to 2 employees. So,
oh, my.
Enthusiastic CPAs know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all the interested parties here. These are not confrontational conversations. You're trying to help. You're trying to improve your client's life by making sure they have a good CPA. You're trying to you're trying to get that person into stronger hands. And you're meeting with someone who could possibly be somebody you refer to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's not a lot of I don't feel a lot of fear in that.
No.
So here, did you keep a copy of that game board?
I believe I've kept a copy of everything you've sent me, but I won't swear to it, Rob.
I will send it to you when we're finished here. But what
okay.
I would like for you to do is to put – you can't put more than two things on the game board because then it becomes a laundry list, and what FAs do is
right.
do the easy ones first.
Sure.
I got a list of 10. Let's see. What's the easiest one? No, I want these
right.
one or two things that you can put on there. And I'd like
right.
for you to tell me what they're going to be and how you're going to measure yourself.
Okay.
So I'm not telling you to do the enthusiastically endorsed, but I just see so many ways that you can be on the phone, have a lot of good conversations, and build your footprint in the community. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things that you build on. I mean, when you do, when you have rituals, you have repetition. I remember when Merrill Lynch first came out with the cash management account, there were FAs that said, this is just too damn complicated. I'm not they do it like, I mean, they don't even think about it. It's so easy.
Right.
So it's the same thing. You get into a ritual, and a ritual is something you do without thinking about it. You're gonna have good conversations. So what else could you measure? I'll just give you some things here to measure. The VIPSA conversation. Between now and the time we talk next, and I know I'm going to change that a little bit. I would like for you, whatever you do, I want you to measure it weekly. If you pick VIPSA, I want you to give yourself a weekly target. If you choose EE, I want you to choose a weekly target. But I would hope that you could, with the VIPSA, I would hope between now and the time we meet next, if that's what you choose, you could have 5, 6, 7 of those conversations, which probably is 5, 6, or 7 more than you're having now.
Yes.
Serious. And the worst thing that comes from a VIPSA conversation is you've planted the seed. Somebody, you go through the VIPSA conversation, and Miss Jones says, gosh, I can't think of anybody right now. And then tomorrow she's playing golf with somebody who's really upset they never hear from the Merrill Lynch guy. And she's just had that conversation with you the day before. She's going to be more likely to say, you need to go see Kent Deaver. Whatever it is, I want you to write it down, and I want you to measure yourself. And I would like for you to send to me what you're measuring, and how much of it. How is it quantifiable? If it's VIPSA, how many? If it's EE, how many? And can't you you get it? These are, I mean, think about what you're talking about. EE, everybody wins. Everybody, the only person who could possibly lose is the bad CPA who loses a client, but you're not talking to him.
Right.
And VIPSA, that starts when somebody says, hey, Kent, I love what you're doing, gives you a compliment of some kind. I love these monthly calls. I love how you've kept me, whatever. You're following up when somebody has recognized the value that you bring to a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's go back. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Yeah. If you think about it, if your close rate, and we did this earlier in Supernova, if your close rate is, let's say 50%, it's higher, but let's use 50% to make the math simple, that means if you got an appointment a month, or let's say if you got 2 referrals a month, that's 24 times 50%, that would be 12 new relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you think about getting 2 appointments a month, that to me seems a lot less than 24 appointments. I know the math is all the same.
Right.
And then, so you think about what we've talked about, and then I'm going back to Larry Wilson's book and rereading. Where have you given 100% regardless of the potential for failure, and been satisfied with the effort regardless of the outcome? That's what I'm asking you to do. You know, we've talked the way, I mean, he puts it much better than I do. What he says is you got to get outside your comfort zone. And the nice thing about getting outside your comfort zone, you know what happens? Your comfort zone gets larger.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Yes.
Then the other thing, getting out of Larry Wilson's book, playing to win, consciously choosing to go as far as I can go with all that I have and learning from whatever happens. So you and I, you have developed a great practice. You have developed a concierge service planning-driven, formal investment process, unparalleled service. All you have to do is be able to tell that, get in front of 24 people, and I think your close rate, you said you do very well, say it's 75%. Now, instead of 12 new accounts, you've got 18, and if they all meet your minimum, you've really added to your practice.
Mm-hmm.
Meaningfully.
Yes.
This is not complicated. You've done the hard part. Agreed?
Yeah, yes, I have.
What do you think is going to be harder, going from zero to a million or from a million to 2 million?
I know which one. I know.
You know, this business paid a lot of my bills, but I wouldn't want to start all over.
Amen.
Amen.
Amen, Rob.
And there's a lot more FAs out there who'd swap practices with you than who wouldn't. I mean.
Right.
Close. So that's what I would ask you to do. I want you to measure it on a weekly basis. It's okay to fail. If you say, I want to have 5 EE conversations this week and you have 4, that's not failure. You've done your best, so maybe next time you'll have 6. Who knows?
Right.
When you start doing it, that phone gets really heavy.
Right.
When they say hello, it's gonna be a lot easier than you think. The hardest part is just getting that you gotta play to win. And for you, it's really, really obvious.
Yeah.
That's why your manager's fronting this money, because he knows it's a good bet.
Yes. What he said.
It's a really good bet.
Yep.
So that's it. I will send you a copy before it starts getting dark here in 12 minutes. I'm going to send you a copy of what the game board looks like so you don't have to be going through that file. What I want from you is today's Monday. I want to know what's on your game board for this week and what the quantity is.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
Don't be surprised if you get an email from me asking for where you are with the game board.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Simple, simple, simple. It's all about execution. It's always been about execution with you. It's never been about not knowing what to do. You know what to do.
Now, let me tell you what my frustration, not my frustration, let me tell you what I would ask from you.
Yep.
And maybe I'm asking too much, and maybe I need to go dig. But when I listen to you go through the script for enthusiastic endorsement, you are so smooth and you are so good, I sit here and I get excited about it. It's something that I can relate to.
Yeah.
And I've had it. And when I listen to you, Rob, I can't write fast enough to write down the script. And that's my concern right now, is that I want that script to be down. I'm really good at reading information and putting it, you know, adding my own words into it. But is that script, is it somewhere in the books that you've already sent me?
It's on the recording. You get an email after every call with a link to the recording. And that recording can be put on pause. So you can listen, pause it, write, listen to 2 more words, whatever. You will get an email with a link to your and a passcode to go in and listen to the recording.
Okay. Okay.
Now, is that good enough? I mean, I've got another 5 minutes here. I'd be happy to go through it with you.
Why don't we do it? Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
The reason that you're asking this question, should somebody ask, part of what I do, you writing?
Yes, I'm writing.
Is to make sure that my clients have the best professional help – away from the things I do for them.
Away from the things
I do for them.
See, that's what I love. Help away from the things I do for
away
them.
Away from the things I do for them. Ms. Jones,
okay.
The reason I'm asking this question is I want to make sure that my clients have the very best professional help away from the things I do for them.
Perfect.
All right?
Got it.
Okay.
Got it.
That's the basis. If anybody says, why are you asking me these questions? They won't, but
right.
You're prepared. Okay. Next thing you have to do is you have to be able to describe what a high, enthusiastically endorsed CPA does. I can't do that for you. You can do that. But
yeah, I can do that one. I feel comfortable with.
It's what?
Go ahead. I do feel comfortable, but go ahead.
Among the things, get the work done on time. Look for ways to save money, but stay within the law. Return my calls. Return my emails. I mean, those are things that I could say about. I've had the same CPA since 95 or 6. I forget which.
Okay.
I mean, he's weird, but he's a really good guy.
Yeah.
Okay. So Ms. Jones loves her CPA. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And your response is, I get to work with CPAs in however you describe your market, in the area, in the Las Vegas area, in the Henderson. Aren't you in Henderson?
No. Nope.
Okay.
Las Vegas.
Okay.
Used to be in Henderson.
In the Las Vegas market. I get to work with CPAs in the Las Vegas market. I like to think I know the good ones.
Okay.
Would you mind if I use your name and call and introduce myself to your CPA?
Okay.
If she doesn't like, if she says, well, Kent, I'm not getting that kind of service after you've described an enthusiastically endorsed CPA, or she just says outright, no, I'm not, I don't like my CPA at all, you say, I work with some really good CPAs in the area. I would be happy to set up a non-obligatory, and don't ask me how to spell that.
No, I'll do that. I would be happy to set up
non-obligatory meeting.
Obligatory
with a CPA who I think does a really good job.
Okay.
The ideal thing, Kent, is to be part of that meeting. That way the CPA really ties you with this client. Whether he comes to – whether, you know, the next time your client's coming in, he comes to your office or you meet at his office, whatever. If all possible, you want to be part of that meeting. You want to make sure your client gets treated well, all those things. All right. So she said – so – but – If she says, yeah, I really love my CPA, you've asked for permission to call the CPA, and here's what you say. Let's assume you get screened. Does she know who you are or whatever they say? Say, well, we have a joint client, Dolores Jones, and see, she suggested that I give her a call. They'll return your call because you're using the client's name.
Right.
Here's what you say. I was recently in a meeting with Mrs. Jones. By the way, she's given me permission to use her name. You don't want the CPA to think that you're divulging confidences here.
Got
it. I was meeting with Mrs. Jones, and she was singing your praises. I get to work with CPAs in the Las Vegas area.
Okay.
I like to think I know the good ones.
Okay.
Is there a time I could stop by
okay.
and you could explain to me what it is you do?
Okay.
That makes Mrs. Jones so excited about your practice.
Perfect.
That's it.
Great. Got it. Every word. Super.
Again, if you had a one final piece here, Ken, if you had a client who called you and said, "Ken, I can't stand my CPA," is there somebody you would recommend? Do you have a go-to CPA?
I don't.
Okay, what about your CPA?
She's retiring, and that's why I'm so focused on this, is because I've referred a lot of clients to her, and some of them are now saying, she's going to retire in a year. What are we going to do?
Oh, man, this is a bird nest on the ground, as we used to say.
Right, right.
So here's when you find people who aren't can't enthusiastically endorse their CPA, plus these folks who are disappointed this other lady's getting ready to retire. I mean, you could be, when you find some really good CPAs, you're going to be able to give them referrals. You want to have more than one person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I did this with a guy in Boston, and he said he got more appointments, more referrals for his CPA than he in a week or 2 weeks, whatever it was, than he'd had in the last 5 years.
I bet. Right.
Yeah. I mean, pretty good deal. All right. So this is it. You got it?
Yes.
Here's what's going to happen. The first call you make is not going to be as good as the second.
No.
And the third will be better than the second. And by the time you have this conversation three times, you will have developed this in your own, you know, you talk differently from how I talk. You'll develop your own, you know, way you're going to say it. And I know one thing for sure. If you do five of these calls a week, or whatever you choose to put on your game board,
mm-hmm.
you will leave the office with a lot more energy than you have been leaving the office.
Mm-hmm.
Because you will have known you'd have gotten outside your comfort zone and done things that are going to help you grow your practice.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had 15 good accounts a year.
Oh, my.
And Kent, you know, using the numbers we talked about, that's a 75% close rate. That's not even two appointments a month.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
All right.
Sounds good, Rob.
I will send you that, the game board deal. You're going to tell me what you're going to measure.
Right.
Okay.
Weekly.
Okay. Always a pleasure.
Great. Yeah, I've enjoyed it, Rob. I always do. Absolutely, always. So thank you very much.
All right, Ken. All right. See ya.
Talk to you next month.
All right.
All right, bye-bye.